to the minutes of our last meeting on April 6th. One correction from Steve Shaw, that is on page 5, and the sixth paragraph, but the minutes now say have to end with the word void, and the word that he said was voidable. So that is one change. Is there a motion to approve the minutes with that change?
I'll move them.
I'll second it.
Are there other corrections or changes, comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? My report, just note two things. One is our featured guest for this afternoon's meeting has had to cancel at the last minute. Steve Diltz from Department of Transportation apparently learned 2 hours ago that he had to be in a meeting in the governor's office. Said he would come back.
Where are his priorities?
Get his right leg.
And perhaps relatedly, I think you know, but in case you don't, that the Highlands Council continues to serve in what has become our auxiliary role of being headhunters to the Corzine administration. And so we now have three of the original members of the council who have accepted jobs in the Corzine administration that either have met or will mean they will need to resign from the council. The latest is Ben Spinelli, who has started as counsel to the Office of Smart Growth in the Department of Community Affairs. Lois Cuccinello will be going to Trenton in June to be an assistant commissioner in the Department of Labor, and Eileen Swan is the Office of Smart Growth. So there either are or soon will be three vacancies on the council. The process for replacing them, in the case of Ben Spinelli, he was appointed to the council by the state senate president, so his vacancy gets filled that way, so that seat gets filled by President Cody. And the other two vacancies, Eileen Swans and Lois Cuccinello will vacate, get nominated by the governor and confirmed by the state senate. I've been in touch with the governor's office about that. I can't say there's a timetable. My sense is that they want to move not just nominations for this council, but for a number of other agencies to get the nominations in place so the Senate can confirm people before the summer recess at the end of June. But they have no guarantees. That's where that stands. The one thing it does mean for us, or that we should all be aware of, is that by our statute, any affirmative action we take needs a majority of the authorized membership. So we need 8 votes to approve anything we do, regardless of how many vacancies there are on the council. So bear in mind as we go forward. Any comments or questions? Members have any items they
The Main Street New Jersey program that the Highlands co-sponsoring. The session is next week, April 25th and 26th. There's also going to be a Main Street New Jersey presentation in Chesterboro on May 9th that the state coordinator, Jeff Bueller, has invited all council members and anyone interested in seeing what Main Street New Jersey is about to attend.
Yeah, that's the
Dante, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A number of things to report on this week. In terms of staffing, we have, through the staff's work with the personnel committee, finalized job descriptions for the positions that we are looking to fill. Those job descriptions have been posted on a number of listservs, which access the most likely places around the state on the internet to get applications. In addition, we placed advertisements with the relevant newspapers. As a result of this, we've had a good response so far. We have 52 applications that have been filed to date. We're expecting more. There is a list that we put in your packet for your review that goes through the names of the folks who have applied. There's a column on the right side which indicates which of the positions they've applied for. In some of the cases where it's blank, it's where applicants really haven't specified. There are situations you may see from the table where applicants haven't submitted all the information that's necessary. We have our HR director returning calls to them to make sure that they submit all that's required for our consideration. Our plan is to expeditiously finalize a list and get our interviews started right away. We've been focusing on doing a number of things which have culminated in today's meeting. But our next priority is going to be to get those interviews to happen. We will then be reporting back to either the Personnel Committee or this full council on recommendations, and we hope therefore to get authority to move forward. In terms of the land preservation initiative that this council has sent to the Land Conservation Committee, staff has been meeting with the SADC Green Acres to start pulling together possibilities for coming up with adequate monies, coming up with procedures and policies that would benefit land preservation here in the Highlands, especially in the preservation area. We hope to pull that together in the next couple of weeks. We hope to set up a meeting of land conservation for next week, but it seems that given the issues that came up and the materials we're going to be collecting, it may be a week later than that, but we are mindful that the council places great importance on land preservation, and so we're working diligently to move that forward. In terms of coordination, we had a couple of good meetings this week, including with the Office of Smart Growth and with COA. Our meetings centered on ensuring ongoing coordination with our efforts with those of those entities. In particular, it's important because the state plan continues to move forward with its process, including plan endorsement, and COA continues to have a schedule that it's looking to meet with regard to affordable housing obligations. Our bottom line to the agencies in terms of recommendation has been that those processes need to make sure to take advantage of the good data that this council is developing as part of the regional master plan, and as much as possible, make sure that their decisions are informed by that information first, and finally by the recommendations that will come out in the plan itself. We've gotten a good response from the executive directors of those two agencies, and we'll be moving that forward. In terms of funding for land acquisition and for the Highlands, today I had the opportunity to go to Trenton to testify on the proposed water fee bill that Senator Smith has proposed again for this session. Some of the major points of the testimony were to stress the importance of water supply, which was the subject of Senator Smith's hearing today. In terms of the centrality of the mission here at the Highlands. We obviously need to protect water in the critical lands that provide the water here in the Highlands. We all know how many New Jersey residents depend on that water. The cost of the fee as proposed is very modest, but it's money that can get leveraged through the Environmental Infrastructure Trust to be very meaningful. So for the Highlands, we want to make sure to protect Highlands water. We want to make sure that we come up with adequate funding for land equity, and in particular, was able to recommend that fees on Highlands water should go back to the Highlands, that the fees that a water bill would collect shouldn't just be the fees that are paid by Highlands residents, but really should include all the folks who benefit from the water, and that includes folks who are drinking water outside of the Highlands. The final recommendation in terms of the substantive thought was that in terms of setting priorities for how the money ought to be used, it would seem commonsensical and appropriate for the regional planning entity here in the Highlands to set those priorities for money that comes back here. In its current language, the bill gives that authority to the DEP statewide. But here, where the money's coming back and where we'll have a plan which will address specifically important resource areas, that's a function which we think ought to reside here at the council. So in sum, you know, the funding is important. It's important that we get it now, and it's even more important given the fact that the Garden State Preservation Trust hasn't been reauthorized yet. We want to make sure that at a minimum, this provides a stopgap between, you know, now when we have existing monies at a critical level and any time that that Garden State Preservation Trust is reauthorized. We'll be talking again with the administration about the bill, its prospects, and how to move it forward. But the themes that I was able to testify about today are ones that we've been putting forward on behalf of the council for some time now, and we hope that that will protect land and do honor to the equity pledge in the bill. Some other good news in terms of the website. We have a great number of folks who are getting information off the website. Matt Curtis, who's head of our MIS area, actually has done some extensive statistics, which we'll try to make available to council members. But it shows that we've already had about 30,000 hits on our website, and we average over 900 hits a day. Folks who come back repeatedly are over 6,000 individuals, and the average length of a visit is about 6 minutes and 50 seconds. All things courtesy of a system which tracks folks when they're online. Sounds like Big Brother in a way, but at least it gives us good data in terms of the fact that a lot of folks are accessing information. We find that the top areas that they are accessing include our calendar to know what events are upcoming, the Act and the maps for information about the Act itself, and information like you see around the room, which provides detailed information for their particular areas. And then the About section, which is just as well about who the members of the council are, what the overall mission is. So we're very gratified that we're getting so much access on the site, and we feel that it's been a very helpful way to make sure that the process stays transparent, which the council has made a priority since the beginning. A number of events were attended by staff over the past couple weeks. Those include the New Jersey Environmental Federation Conference, Warren Chamber of Commerce event, Morristown TDR briefing, Hunterdon County Tax Board, Lake Hopatcong Borough, just to name some of them. Occasions where either towns reached out to us and asked someone to appear to provide some information about activities of the council and to provide their input, or situations where, like the tax board, wanted to know a little bit more about valuation and think about those issues. In terms of upcoming events, we have a number planned between now and the end of the month, just so the members of the public know what some of those are. Your members have them in the ED report. They include Alliance for Action, Water Supply Plan Meeting, a meeting with Holland Township, a meeting with Morris County Economic Development Corporation, an event with the Raritan Compact, the Warren County Projects Committee. We have our first municipal roundtable, which is scheduled for the 27th. That's with the Sussex municipalities. And the 29th, an ANJEC TDR conference, which give a sense of some of the towns and counties that have been interested in speaking with staff, and also to know some of the issues that are important, including TDR. And we'll continue to provide a list of the upcoming events in the ED report, and we're looking to see if there are other ways as well. Today, Tom Borden and I were discussing a process where we would, in addition to identify the events that were upcoming, but try to call members in particular who might be most interested in particular events, and in that way, helping the members to know what events are coming up besides just having them on a list. So. We hope that will help you, and we're working on that. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I just want to go back to Duncan's first thing about the list of the list of the members' packets and people who apply for jobs here. Is that, I think, obviously should be treated confidentially, because obviously many people who apply don't want their current employer to know that they'd rather work for us. And two other things about that list, though. A number of people who expressed interest in working in the council have done so through one or more members. So I'd ask you all if anybody did approach you to look over this list and make sure people you know about are on the list. And third thing is whether or not they approached you, if they're people you know on the list and you have some assessment of them that might be relevant, give that to Don Beck. So yes, for that, all of our wisdom on this. Any other questions for Don Beck?
Mr. Chairman, Don, I'm very pleased that the staff has been continuing their outreach efforts and have a lot more planned for the future. Given the fact, though, that we, even though we have extended our deadline for completing the plan. I just want to make sure that we are able to accomplish all of these things together, that we can stay on target. You know, we've got that 600 and some 88 tasks or whatever that have to be completed, and are we going to be able to do all of these things?
Yes.
Cross your heart?
Cross my heart. Today, senior staff, we were talking about, you know, obviously the schedule is difficult to maintain, but so that you know, we're not diverting staff from any of the things that we mentioned. And it's basically that Steve, Tom, and I really aren't sleeping very much, so giving so our free time is just going to this rather than the rest. If we don't look tired, then we're doing okay. So it's really not taking from the staff time effort, and we're balancing that. We're mindful that we're placing most of our effort on the plan. But we are able to do this, and if that becomes a problem, we'll make sure the plan doesn't do without.
Chairman, Dante, the plea before the Senate, was it, Senator Smith's committee, keeping the water tax revenue in the Highlands is something that we talked about 11 months ago. What was the response to that? Was it pretty stone-faced? Or?
Well, for members, I mean, they're really not responding to testimony at the time. I can tell you that we are actively talking to the administration about that and about the need to dedicate something specifically to the Highlands. My sense of it is that today's meeting was mostly, wasn't particularly focused on the water fee bill itself. The context was larger. It was about drought. What do we do to prevent droughts? What about interbasin transfers, water supply generally? And one aspect of that is a bill that would provide fees. So I think it was a more general conversation, and I think building on some of the testimony of the climatologists that talked about the problems of ensuring that precipitation is going to be enough, and the DEP's testimony about the scarcity of water and the frequency of droughts over the past several years, I think the stage is set to go on to look more specifically at some of the terms. So I think that conversation will be happening, and we'll be able to report back to you more about whether it's something that we can get back to the Highlands. I will note that there were a number of folks who attended today to testify who support sending money back to the Highlands, and that includes some of the groups who testify here regularly, the Highlands Coalition, plus the counties of Hunterdon and Warren, that in particular both are very willing to work with the council on trying to ensure that we have adequate funds for our land preservation. So I think that suggests that there's a political base that could be built upon as we go forward.
Would it be helpful and or appropriate for the Highlands Council to do a resolution of support for that motion?
I'll leave it to others. My initial reaction would be at some point that might be helpful. I think it may be early in the process, because I think administration, I think, is mostly focused on the budget, obviously, and probably needs to digest this a little more. And I think Senator Smith was willing to hear us on it. But I don't know whether, I think the final language of the bill hasn't been struck, in my view, yet, so there is time.
Other questions? We turn to the Natural Resources Committee, and which met, I'll try to talk slowly, which met just earlier today, and
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. The Natural Resource Committee met this morning. The primary focus of our agenda was the technical work that the staff has been doing with the U.S. Geological Survey in terms of developing methodologies for assessing the capacity and availability of water in the Highlands region. As you can imagine, that is sort of the benchmark of all the decision-making we've been doing in the regional plan development. And if you're really interested, there's a fairly lengthy, 30-page technical memo with lots of graphs and numbers that you can look at. But we have had, I think, two or three meetings on this issue, and a lot of interaction with TAC, a lot of interaction with the public through the planning charrette that was held at the end of last month. there is a consensus, I think, around the methodologies that will be used, and I think an affirmation from everybody that was at the table this morning that those methodologies adequately take into account all the issues that we really ought to be concerned about, how much water naturally comes into the streams, how land uses, how development affects that, the goals of ensuring there's enough supply for the region, as well as taking into account uses of water from water supply outside of the region, and taking into account how much water needs to stay in the streams for ecological purposes. And as you can imagine, that's a pretty good suite of questions right there. I'm trying to figure out how to quantify that, related back to characterization of what's actually happening in this region. It's fairly complex. The Geological Survey, I think, has done a lot of really great work along with the staff. So we are, I think, ready to move on to the second phase, which is now having a technical basis on which to assess the idea of how much water, the capacity of water is there. The next question is how much of that water is available for various uses, whether it's societal uses or ecological uses. And we then got into a second set of discussions about policy questions, which the council itself will have to answer in terms of how do you make those decisions to partition that water? How do you basically divvy it up among the various uses and goals? And we went through a process this morning. We came up with probably 25 or 30 separate considerations. Then turned back to the committees and to the TAC and to the council for input in terms of framing those conversations. The second piece of business of the day was the
question.
My question is, was the input from the Charette?
Yeah, I think it was. Only because of the fact that it's clearly a very complex
process
and issue. And, you know, there's a fairly common problem of scientists trying to talk to people that aren't scientists, and particularly water scientists, which are really jargon-based people. So I think the fact that the Charette's and gone through this process a couple times, if nothing else, allowed us to sort of deconstruct the language and understand what people were saying, understand where there were members of the environmental community had issues about, is this analysis, is this approach going to deal with this issue? And they were bringing very real world situations. In fact, there's no water below the Napanee Dam in the Quantico River because of the reservoir system and the operation. How is that going to be accounted for, and how the council shapes its regional management plan? And so I think the public participation processes, the TACs, the charrettes, really allowed us to get into that to the point where people could understand. And I think the staff at USGS responded, were responsive to those concerns, and were able to figure out where, how this had to be designed in a way to account for all that, to make sure that the universe of issues that we needed to address was going to be. Steve,
do
you want to add anything?
No, great summary.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just say one thing before we move on. Steve Balzano did a particularly outstanding job on this water analysis. Part of what Tim was referring to is the fact that there were a number of different stakeholders that came forward with very different questions and approaches, and they really wanted to know what the information meant to their concerns. And I think a lot of what was done by Steve very successfully was to show them how all of those interests had been addressed and that the format and the approach was sound. And I think by bringing those folks together, so I think it puts this whole approach that the council is following on a very secure footing. So I just wanted to make sure the members were aware of that.
I would add to that, I also want to recognize Lisa Boyce because part of the responsiveness was that when the public brought various methodologies to the table and said, why aren't you using this one? Because our perspective is that this works better than we're done. So the staff, Lisa and Steve, went through and I think in very much a good faith, evaluated those, did a lot of work, did a lot of additional research to respond to that and be able to say to the stakeholders and the folks that were coming in, this is why this applies, it doesn't work, but this is how it fits. And so it really was a lot of work. Directly in response to the issues that people have raised. that the staff is working on.
So, Tim, does it seem like the stakeholders are buying into the methodology that we're going to be adopting?
Yeah, well, everybody with the builders, the farmers, the environmentalists, and we were all at the table this morning, and after we talked it through, there was nobody that had remaining outstanding questions or was saying that this still doesn't work for me. So, to the extent that that's an expression of consensus.
Which I think it is.
Wow. It's an understatement.
But if I can also thank you, Tim, for acknowledging Lisa, but also acknowledge Dan Van Abs, who has kept us rock solid in terms of our approach and validity of the approach. His advice has served us very well to this point.
So we mark that down, money well spent.
Yes, extraordinarily well spent. So Dan earns every penny.
I have one other thing I wanted to say. I think, Deb, you asked about the TAC. I think I wasn't really sure how well the TAC process was working until we got to this last round of charrettes. And I think, you know, I now have confidence that the TAC input process is working, at least as far as this issue is concerned, which is the one that I've been involved in. And one of the things, for instance, that we did today is we invited the TAC to attend the Natural Resources Committee meeting. So it was a joint, you know, they sat there and then also came up and joined the committee. And there was, you know, very detailed questions and input. And even today, further areas that need research were identified, further considerations were added to the list of things that need to be put into the works before we come up with really gelling how we're going to approach the water capacity analysis. So I think that, you know, on this issue anyway, the water capacity analysis, I think that the TAC process has really worked. And the fact that professionals and stakeholders alike are willing to give up many, many hours of time, 2 days in that charrette, and then another whole morning on this issue, you know, a four-hour meeting this morning. I think really, you know, we should be grateful, and I am grateful, for the TAC members. I think we really have a better product at the end as a result of that.
Listening to you, it sounds to me like not only are we having a better product, but we're going to have support for it. Back to the comments at the last meeting about the timing of the plan and everything. We're investing time now that I think in the long run.
So we won't have to defend the plan.
Absolutely. In the science end, where we need it.
Right. So we still have a lot of difficult decisions to make, but at least the basis, the science is informing that there's a consensus around. So that will help. I mean, just come from a debate about fisheries issues in Washington yesterday. I can tell you that science can often be a focal point of the debate. So I think this is really helpful in moving that forward. The second part of the meeting this morning, Mr. Chairman, was about the discussion of the Agricultural Sustainability Grants Program. And if you don't mind, Kurt, you want to spend most of the time developing this?
Sure. Thank you. We've reported on this in the past. Work closely with Steve and Kim to develop a grant program to address some areas that we feel will help sustain, and not only sustain, but retain a viable agriculture in the Highlands region. We identified three key areas, one of them being integrated pest management and integrated crop management. The second one being development and encouragement of markets, as well as niche crops. And the third being the assisting the County Ag Development Boards with program needs in terms of staffing. They would be the ones who would be implementing these grant programs, and they're also, of course, facing a larger workload because of the increase that we expect in farmland preservation activity. We've met with different stakeholders. We've had meetings with all representatives from all seven County Ag Development Boards who are eager to cooperate together and not duplicate the efforts of one another. We've, with the assistance of council, have put together the appropriate language, both for the grant program and for the resolution, and we're prepared to offer it to the council for approval.
Wonderful.
want more detail, I'd be happy to do that.
Well, why don't we move into that resolution as the 11th item on the agenda, but why don't we move into that now? It's the second resolution back at us.
Kim's actually handing out a revised version of some changes.
Okay. While she's doing that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a couple questions. This is my first blush view of this. Just having a development for somebody. I support the three objectives of the program. You said that you met with all seven county ag boards. I presume those are the seven Highlands County ag boards.
That's correct.
It strikes me, it struck me from my first introduction to this resolution, it strikes me now that this is something the state should be doing and not the Highlands Council with our limited funding. Do you agree with that, first of all?
Before you answer, let me just say apparently the PA system's not working, so we should all talk louder.
Okay.
You are.
Walk into it.
Okay.
Yeah,
there
you
are.
Right in front of you.
All right.
Did
you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You heard the question?
I heard the question.
Everybody hear the question?
No.
The question was, is this not some program that would be better undertaken by the state rather than by the Highlands Council with our more limited resources?
Well, I think if you read the legislation in the Act, we're charged with a lot of different functions, and one of those is maintaining a viable agricultural industry in the Highlands region. So I think just as we're legitimate in investing into community centers with grants for color research and for sewage system upgrades, I think we're equally appropriate to invest in the agricultural industry in the Highlands region. And these grants are very specifically designed to specifically assist farmers in the Highlands, not outside of the Highlands.
That's what troubles me somewhat. And I'm not objecting to the goals, I'm not objecting to the grants, I'm not objecting to anything except that. It sounds like an elitist program. Why are not farmers throughout the state of New Jersey helped this way by the state of New Jersey or by the Department of Agriculture? Why is it left to us to support farmers in the Highlands? I'm not objecting to that.
I understand. Well, you could argue conversely that anything that has anything to do with the Highlands Act is elitist. I mean, you know, we could bounce this argument back and forth because you're just singling out the agricultural industry in the Highlands, and I could say that owning property in the Highlands is elitist, and that this act singles out people in a particular area that and it may help them in some way. So I think we can. The bottom line is, I think that the act tells us to do this. We have the capabilities of doing it. We have the monies that have been provided to do it. And we're suggesting that we indeed do it.
Yeah, I'm not objecting, mind you.
I understand.
This is in the interest of a full inquiry here. And your justification is a good one. We haven't, in fact, supported COA with COA grants in municipalities in the Highlands and not done that outside of the Highlands for our own purposes. That's perfectly legitimate. I think that there is an issue here, and I think that, in a sense, we're letting the state off the hook. The state should be doing things like this through the Department of Agriculture and through the SADC, and that the state is not doing it, not funding it, and that we are funding it, I think gives the state an out, and lets the state get away with something.
Well, it's a misnomer to suggest that the state's not participating, because, for instance, if you take IPM, there's about an $850,000 budget, roughly, to run the tree, fruit, and the vegetable IPM statewide. We're talking about a grant program that will provide perhaps $75,000 per year into the program. So the balance of that funding is still coming from state, federal, and producer, grower payments into the program. So in effect, I mean, the state still is paying, isn't it? It's just coming out of a different pocket of the state.
And when the state pays, who is that paying, the state?
Taxpayers, of course. Right. So, I mean, the same people are paying, it's just being funded in a different means.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would add to that is one of the things that the committee talked about this morning, there's a fair amount of discretion retained within the council itself in terms of what the specific grants are. Committee was very clear that we were looking to complement things that are not necessarily ongoing or status quo and that are unique to the Highlands. That we hope that in the applications that come in to us, that there will, that the applicants will keep an eye on things that very specifically advance the interests of the council and the interests of the Pilots Act, and that will be, you know, something that's kind of distinguished above and beyond the normal.
And my last question, will there be specific parameters for dispersion of grants, criteria that need to be met?
Very specific.
We don't know what they are yet.
Well, we do know that. I'll let council
answer
that question.
Part of the discussion this morning was that it was a draft of guidelines and criteria for grant selection, which we're going to continue to refine. This resolution simply provides authority for the committee to continue to refine those before releasing it. But this will be different than the COA grants, for example, which were pretty much self-executing. These are going to be reviewed by the Natural Resources Committee in terms of the criteria for selection and then the selection process itself. So it will be a detailed review. And then ultimately come back to full council for approval.
Let me ask a procedural question. The resolution the Natural Resources Committee approved this today and recommended to full council, I assume.
Yes.
The resolution would have the council today authorize this subject to the Budget and Finance Committee reviewing it, which is backwards in the way we normally do things. The next council meeting is 2 weeks from now. Is there time sensitivity to doing it this way as opposed to having the Budget Committee consider this within the next 2 weeks and having the council approve this or consider it 2 weeks?
I don't think 2 weeks is going to make any difference.
Probably. I mean, we need to have a budget finance subcommittee meeting and review all the grants and review where we are, where we stand to the proposed state budget. I see this fitting in. With that, we could approve this, but it's still going to be subject to that. So.
There's no objection. I suggest we do it that way and just have it on the agenda for our meeting.
Chairman.
Do we have a means of letting the ag community know about it? Do we have something that we're going to sort of they all know? Or?
Good question. we, as I said, we have met with all the county ag development boards. We have met with the providers of integrated crop management and integrated pest management. In terms of marketing and niches, I believe what we're going to do is connect with the Cooperative Extension Service. You and also the County Ag Development Boards, and they all have various newsletters and membership needs to distribute the information. And I'm sure the Farm Bureau would put it in their newsletter for us as well to share.
So some responsibility will fall on the County Ag Boards.
Oh, that's right.
Promote it.
And municipalities we notify as
yes,
well.
Yes, thank you.
Kurt, who will be the applicant for these? I mean, it won't be individual farmers. It will be
It could be, but it's more likely going to be groups. You know, when it comes to the integrated pest management and integrated crop management components, I think we'll likely see two applicants. One will be Rutgers University, who's providing tree, fruit, and vegetable IPM right now to cost-share a program associate in the Highlands region. I think the other application we may see is from the North Jersey Conservation Resource, thank you very much, who has in place an integrated crop management program which mainly focuses on grain and forage crops. They're already providing the service. So I think what we're going to see is those two entities come forward for IPM-ICM. In terms of the marketing and niches, I think you're going to see a little bit more of a mixture. I think you're going to see some cooperatives come forward. For instance, there's a group of dairy farmers looking to brand milk as Jersey Fresh Milk, and they formed a cooperative, so they may seek a grant to help further that process along as part of the marketing niche thing. There's an organization that oversees the urban tailgate markets in about 40 different communities in northeastern New Jersey. Predominantly, Highlands farmers are the ones who attend these markets. I think you'll likely see that group come forward with some sort of grant proposal. You may see a group of farmers come as a co-op and with some sort of new and innovative idea.
And today at the meeting, there was some discussion about diverse groups, such as the Organic Farmers Association, perhaps, might be an applicant. you know, on behalf of organic farmers in an effort to develop, you know, that market. So there's I think, you know, what the council talked about today, what the committee talked about today was making this as open and, you know, diverse a process as we can in order to stir new ideas and, you know, to try to pull in groups that maybe traditionally haven't been involved.
But to be clear, it's municipalities and counties who
right.
actually be the applicants.
Right.
They may work with different groups right. to partner.
Right.
They're actually hoping the counties will partner together on these issues.
In the coordination with particularly the CADBs to date, we've been encouraging them to partner, to work together where one would serve as the lead recipient, working with a series of partners, other counties, other interested parties to deliver like services across the region so that we start to promote some consistency in terms of sustainable agricultural practices across the region. But as Tom indicated, the grant applicant would have to be a municipal or county entity. We're primarily targeting counties to promote regional consistency, but we're not excluding municipalities from having the opportunity if they want to pursue a particular grant.
Does that conflict with what you were just saying, Kurt? Because I was hearing from you with particular, it could be smaller bodies, and yet it surprised me when Tom said, but, and Steve said, it seems like it's going to be town, like the check will always be written out to a town or to a town.
It has to by law. So what's going to happen?
In your mind, it doesn't conflict. You saw it that way?
No, what it is what I expect will happen is one of the county ag development boards, one of the seven, is going to step forward and say, we're willing to be the grant applicant for IPM. And all the other six CADBs are going to say, we're really glad you did that because we don't want any more work with it. And maybe another county will take markets and niches. And then they'll be the entity that receives the grant money and who will receive applications. We'll review the entire package, but that's the way it has to be distributed. We can't go direct to the state, we can't go directly to organizations or individuals.
But yet, the presumption is that the committee, the resource committee, will actually be the judge and jury of awarding of these, and reporting back to the full council.
For
the grand jury, we're going to report it up to the right council.
We'll be the jury.
You'll be the jury. Okay.
Now let me ask you, so we're going to be giving out this money, right, to whoever we deal with. How are we going to know that they've used this money appropriately and whether or not it accomplished what we had hoped to accomplish? And if we just hand that money out, or is there going to be a feedback process or reporting process?
Absolutely. And again, I think this falls back when we had our meeting with representatives from Rutgers. You know, one of the very specific things we said was, you know, not only are we going to require you to report back to us because we need to have an accounting, not only for statutory purposes of how the money is being utilized to support the goals and objectives of the Act, but we also want this information back so that it can support our mission in developing the regional master plan, because we're going to be able to have an accounting of, you know, how many growers are participating, how many acres does this impact, how many thousands of pounds of pesticides were not utilized because of the utilization of integrated pest management practices. You know, that's the type of feedback that we're going to have, in addition to the dollars and cents statutory feedback.
I have a question for Tom. Maybe this resolution should incorporate more as to the process that, okay, we'll hand the money out, but periodically, and I don't know how often that should be, they have to report back based on their progress, and maybe we should address that here?
The committee has a draft set of guidelines that they've reviewed today that will be, continue to be updated, that has the details of the grant program in it. And that's how we've done all our grant programs, is create a process that's very detailed, but the resolution authorizes the committee to overview and review that process.
It doesn't talk about that, though, in the resolution, so maybe there should be some reference to something.
I didn't make it clear enough, but the delegation in paragraph 1 under now therefore be it resolved is that they are charged with developing and implementing the process for solicitation and distribution in that first paragraph. And that's the draft guidelines that have been developed by committee to date. And then they will also review specific applications.
But it doesn't talk about follow-up. It talks about...
I can, if we're going to table this resolution, I don't mind supplementing it and putting that into
so
it.
So everybody knows that we expect there to be a follow-up process.
Yep.
Yeah, in the grant programs to date, the COA, the MP3s, the CP3 grants were very prescriptive in terms of identifying deliverables. We're approaching this program from a different perspective, being more allowing more creative freedom of the applicant to solicit innovative ideas within specific program areas that were identified to be consistent with the goals of the Act. The framework of the regional master plan as currently envisioned. The guidelines that have been developed by committee to date establish the requirements based upon the individual applicant's program of reporting back on not only the progress of fulfilling the work that's been performed under the grant, but some measure of success reported back either periodically or at the conclusion of the grant program. So there will be, as part prior to award, the requirement for not only regular reporting on utilization of the grant monies, but final reports on the success of the program.
In fact, maybe just specifically to read from the stuff we worked this morning, applicants may be required to make a presentation summarizing the process, the scope of the work. So, but I think your point is well taken. That we want to be monitoring the sort of final accounting of how the project went for both fiscal purposes, but also for Kurt's purposes. What are the lessons learned? You know, how can they be used to be leveraged?
Well, people have numbers of other suggestions for improving the rest of the resolution to get them to Tom between now and the next meeting. The 10th item on the agenda, I'll refer to that, which is, this is going back to the last meeting, this is a resolution to more formally say what we did by motion of the last meeting, just to change the schedule for adopting the plan, to adopt the schedule for getting it done by the end of the year. Feeling the staff, the council, that we would be in stronger legal standing to do this by resolution to supplement the action
of the last meeting. No, what I attempted to do was to simply describe the provisions of the Act and simply describe the process of the last meeting and to ratify the decision.
Did everybody read the daily record editorial? They didn't challenge us for putting it off, but they said, you better not do it again.
Yes. Would someone like to move this?
I'd like a motion to adopt this resolution in November.
Is there a second?
Second.
Questions or comments on it?
John,
yes.
I have something. You all know I voted in opposition to this this motion resolution at the last meeting, feeling that we didn't have the legal authority to ignore something that was put in legislation by the legislature. So since I was the only one, I thought I better do some research to make sure that I wasn't mistaken. So I went and got the state constitution, and here it is. And so, and I don't want to belabor the issue, but I served on township council here in Chester for 6 years when I was really young. And when I reflect back on that service, there were times that I felt that I didn't stand on some principles that I thought I should. And I really vowed that in public service going forward, I wasn't going to make those mistakes again. So I'm not chiding anybody. I'm not criticizing. I'm not standing on a soapbox right now. But I really feel I have a legitimate concern. I went to the Article 5, which is the executive branch. And in Article 5, Section 4, item number 4, it outlines boards, commissions, and other bodies as department heads appointed by the governor. So we are clearly in the executive branch. And in that Article 5 number 10, 11, excuse me, powers and duties of the governor, execution of the laws, it clearly says, and I'm reading now, the governor shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. To this end, he shall have the power by appropriate action or proceeding in the court brought in the name of the state to enforce the compliance with any constitutional or legislative mandate, or to restrain violation of any constitutional or legislative power or duty by any officer, department, or agency of the state. But this power shall not be construed to authorize any action or proceeding against the legislature. To me, it seems black and white. The law is passed, the legislature is empowered by the Constitution to pass the law. The law says do it by a certain date. It doesn't say if you feel the other components are more important, then you can ignore the due date. I'm going to vote against the resolution. I don't question the need for more time to do a better job. And I appreciate the letters that, John, you sent to the legislature and to the governor. But I really feel that we haven't allowed them the opportunity to take the action which is needed, which I feel is amendment to the law. And this is the basis for it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just on a procedural point, and so that everyone understands, I believe the proposed resolution today doesn't propose to take the action that you undertook at the last meeting. The proposal that I believe has been moved today is to adopt this as an accurate statement of what action the council took at its last session. And I would suggest that if council obviously can reconsider its decision, that that would be a separate motion or action.
I agree with exactly what you said. I read the resolution carefully, and it is consistent with what we said. To Kurt's point, the governor will take care to make sure that the laws are executed faithfully. Whether the governor wants to chide us or not allow us to go forward, even if we adopt this resolution, would be up to the governor, and not up to us. But if we feel we need the time, I think it's in the best interest of our overriding mission to adopt this resolution and to support the letter that the chairman sent to the governor so that the governor is fully aware of this issue. You know, with respect to you, Kurt, I compliment you on your research. I think it's great. And But the governor can make sure the laws are faithfully implemented without necessarily implementing the action against the council if we choose to do it. Am I right, Tom? The governor has the authority.
The governor can veto our minutes 10 days.
Exactly, my point. Right. The governor can veto the minutes.
Mr. Schreier, would you entertain an amendment that would reflect in a whereas paragraph the fact that we have sent these two letters dated April 13th to the governor and the legislature? Just and whereas we've sent the letters dated April 13th. And if you wanted to, even cite the observation that we make in the letter that the governor will see our minutes in due course, but at least reflect the fact that we've sent the letters indicating the sense embodied in the resolution.
I certainly have no problem with that amendment. I will second it if you wish. You've made it. And I think that might help to satisfy Kurt a little bit, not retire.
A little bit.
So the answer is yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So that's an amendment that's been made and seconded and accepted by the maker of the motion. Are there other comments from members of the council? Members of the public who wish to comment on this resolution?
Want me to come up or speak for me?
Well, you speak loudly.
I'll speak loudly. My name is David Shope. I would like to see some, first of all, I disagree with this. I hear Kurt's analysis completely. However, that doesn't seem to they required to stop you from doing what you're about to do. So I would like to ask you for periodic updates of the progress of the various things that you have to do to complete this in 6 months. This will be important, it will be valuable, and I hope you don't make it like so many typical jobs, grass where you get the 98% real quick and the last 2% takes forever. I would like an accurate update of all the tasks remaining. Thank you.
I'm happy to say that I think the council agrees with you, and we expect that from the staff as we go forward, and that's basically the comment that Ms. Lenz made earlier. Other comments?
Yes, sir.
Terry Kern, Boacton, 70 acres in preservation area. I thought at the last meeting you said there was a, you were extending it 6 months. Is this not 8 months?
No, the deadline was June 30th. It was June 30th, and we've extended it until the end of the calendar year.
The original date was right. June.
Right.
Okay. There was no date, just December.
Right.
End of the year.
End of the year, I think, is what we said. Good comments? On this resolution.
Hi, David Pringle, New Jersey.
Excuse me.
David Pringle, the campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation and also a consumer of Highlands Water and with my family in Cranford, in Union County and Elizabethtown Water. We support the extension. I think anybody who, if you weren't aware there was going to be a delay, you weren't paying attention for the last several months, it's clear that there was a need for delay. You have to get it right. Getting on time is important, but not as important. And I think you're actually taking your deadlines much more seriously than many state environmental laws. As Tim could attach, we had to sue the Department of Environmental Protection 3 times in the 90s for CAFRA rules. Each time the judge said, yes, you're right, DEP do the rules, and they didn't. So you're taking your job much more seriously and are to be admired for that. That said, it's important that we do, in fact, get it done in December. Especially in the planning area, these resources are being lost every day through the exemptions, through the grandfathering. In the planning area, you don't even have those benefits. So we urge you to stay to the task. And in the interim, the DEP rules become that much more important, and we hope the council will continue weighing in with DEP as they move forward in adopting the final rules and hopefully propose a supplemental proposal to fix some of the remaining loopholes, even though the final proposal was better than the draft, and I know the council has shared many of the concerns of environmentalists as the DEP has proposed these rules. Thank you.
Other comments on the resolution?
Yes.
I just want to say that, you know, we all have to follow the rules, the law, and I think the council should go to the legislature and get it. Well, I understand that you need more time.
Other comments? Any other comments from council?
Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I know I already said this at the subcommittee, at last meeting where this was being considered in the subcommittee, but I did want to say that I do think that it's a very good idea that you're getting the base data together in a very complete form, and I think the task is really enormous and complex that that you set for yourself and could not be anticipated that it would be quite as complex even, I think, that as it is. So we really are with you on this. Thank you.
Council members have other comments on the resolution? The resolution before it is as it is written before us with the amendment we'd add another whereas indicating that we have sent letters to the governor and the legislature making no more plans. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstentions?
Okay. Resolution carries. Mr. Chairman, the amendment offered by Mr. Salvara also included, I believe, recognizing that the governor has authority to approve, disapprove based on review of the minutes. Is that part of the amendment?
It wasn't quite clear. I mentioned it.
What said that?
Yeah.
Mr. Schreier is happy with that. I am happy.
Well, I think it's understood. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Supposed to do.
And just to be clear on that point, the minutes we just approved earlier today are the minutes that he then has 10 days from the time we deliver them to him to be able to overturn that action. Item 12 is the resolution regarding grants to municipalities and counties.
For the council's consideration, there's a resolution approving 4 COA grants to 4 municipalities, one of which is to obtain a substantive certification for the township of Hampton Borough in the amount of $12,500. 3 remaining COA third round compliance grants in the amount of $7,500 each to the townships of Boonton, Denville, and Jefferson. This is under an existing COA grant program that we've just, as a result of this, exceeded 50% of Highlands municipalities taking advantage of the COA grant. But the staff recommends council consideration approval of the resolution as proposed.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
I presume half the boroughs never had substantive certifications, that right?
Correct.
They've gone through two rounds without certification, so we're going to push them into the third round.
Other comments or questions? Any public comments on the resolution? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Council members, have any other items before we turn to the public comment? Okay. We're now to public comments. As you know, if you've been here before, we limit you to 3 minutes and do not engage in questions and answers. But to the extent you have questions, members of the staff or perhaps the council will get back to you. We also welcome written statements if you have. Those you would like to submit. Is there anyone who would like to speak at this time? Sir.
I'm Robert Fry, a farmer in Pohackonk Township. The ground temperature is 54 degrees and I should be home planting corn, but I'm here trying to enlighten you people. Another farmer, also in the Highlands, has had his corn planted for 2 weeks with extremely expensive triple stacked hybrids treated to germinate at the proper soil temperature. Last year, he grew the highest yielding field of non-irrigated corn in America. He and his beautiful Musconetcong Valley farm have been featured in national farm magazines. His yields surpassed even those in Pulaski County, Illinois, where the really smart farmers moved to 18 years ago when they sold their Greenwich Township farms to Toll Brothers and Wyndham Farms. You may ask how this is possible. Well, it's simple. A few years ago, he sold off a building lot and paid off the mortgage. Whoopee, no debt. In a year or so, he sold another lot and bought a huge new shiny tractor. In subsequent years, he got a new big combine, could afford to pay more rent, and outbid other farmers for better land, and even buy his fertilizer by buying it direct from Lancaster County. And he never missed the half a dozen acres he sold. It was really goat ground anyway. But this was too good for the gate slammers. New people changed the zoning from 1 acre to 2.5 to 5 and then 10 acres. Now you people overrode that with 25 and 88 acre zoning. Mount Laurel decisions, COA, the Builder's Remedy, and Fast Track have assured that only large, well-financed, politically connected entities can build, so that the politicians can be exploited. It's a vendetta against the farmers. This council's recent informational meeting was a farce, since farmland preservation money runs out next year and everybody else wants to dip into the proposed water tax. Furthermore, in my township alone, Pohackonk's pig program has been stymied by the intricacies of the Highlands Act. These landowners applied before 2004 in perfectly good faith for preservation. And I have a list of the block and lot numbers if you're interested. With Earth Day coming up this week, it's ironic that everybody who doesn't own any land wants to control it and simply would not know what to do with it if they had it. I gotta go over this with you.
I brought my timer today.
It's upside down.
I didn't start yet. I didn't start yet.
It doesn't work that way.
How many minutes is it now?
It's a 3 minute egg cooker.
And I'll testify that I almost bought that at Target yesterday.
Thank you. You were thinking about me.
It was a 3 minute timer.
My grandson bought that for me, so one of many. All right, I'm going to turn it over. Here we go. All right. My name is Hank Klump. I'm a farmer in Hunterdon. My 150 acres have been put into Highlands Preservation. You say you need 6 more months to complete the master plan. You could take 6 more years, and you still wouldn't make it right if you don't go back to the legislators who wrote the act so poorly and make some big changes. As it stands, you need a dedicated funding source, and it isn't there. Many paid environmentalists come before you telling us what is right for our land, regardless of our laws. Are any of them saying things like, you can take 90% of my investment for this noble cause? Of course not, because they are letting people like me financially fund the program. I attended a TAC meeting on the 28th, 29th of March, and an important issue that came up there was omitted from the slide presentation showed here on April 6th. It is the total repeal of the Highlands Act as it now stands. You tell me that meetings after meetings, I basically say the same thing. You are right. Actually, my sign speaks for me. My sign, our property values have been stolen. That's it. This council can tell me you are fixing this and making it right. My sign and I will stay home. I am still waiting for over 6.5 months for the map I requested showing my scientific boundaries that put my farmland into the Highlands Preservation. I understand there are few openings on the council. However, when I was here last time, I was told I needed a tie, so I'm ready. I'd like to sit between Mr. Wingert and Mr. Shire. Well, I got a seat anyway. And maybe a farmer with everything to lose on this council would make a difference. Do you think Corzine would mind? And I just happen to have this here. Yeah, put that on. It's, you know.
I'll show you how to tie it.
Would you help me in on that? I mean, I need a lot of help. But just make a little more room for me next time. I appreciate that. Thank you. And I still have a little time yet. Thank you.
I would just note for the members of the council, Mr. Klump refers every so often to his waiting 6 months for a response from the council. My understanding is he did get a response from the council quite some time ago saying that we don't have such a map, that there would that explicitly explained why any piece of land is in or outside the jurisdiction. Yes.
Well, how could you determine where the legislation has been passed without the scientific study?
That's the question you keep asking, but I'm just saying when you make it sound like we did not respond to you, we have responded to you, but we haven't been able to give you the answer you wanted. That's
because
different.
There is no science?
No, that's not what I said. There is no map that explicitly explains why a particular piece of land is in or outside.
Wouldn't that apply to everybody in the Highlands?
It applies to the legislative process for passing a land use law in New Jersey, whether or anywhere, whether it's about the Highlands or any other part of the state. I don't want to get caught up in this one, but I just wanted to be clear that we have been responsive to these things. Yes, sir.
Today, I want to read you a letter that I wrote on April 7th. It's to all the legislators. I've been trying to send it to all of them. There's a lot of them, so I haven't gotten them all out yet. I've gotten about 40 or 50 out. And to Governor Corzine and a few other officials. It's very short. My name is Andy Drysdale. I'm from Chester Township, and I'm in the preservation area. My wife Lois and I are the owners of a 16.5-acre parcel of land in Chester Township, Morris County, New Jersey. I have been self-employed land surveyor since 1969. Our land was our retirement plan. At least three-quarters of its value was gone unless the unnecessary line enclosing an area called the preservation area and the draconian rules being imposed on that area by the DEP are removed. I am 70 years old. I have worked very hard all my life and I'm still doing so. I feel as though I've been mugged. Our lives have been on hold for nearly 2 years now. Yesterday, the Highlands Council admitted that they cannot complete their plan by the deadline mandated by the Highlands Act and are going to ask for an extension of time. This would be a perfect time to nullify all of the other bad features of the Act so that people could get on with their lives and the Council could do what should have been done prior to the Act. Thank you.
My name is David Shope. I live in Long Valley. And I guess you can draw the same conclusions that the newspapers are drawing. The voters have spoken. They have rejected close to 50% of the school budgets. The voters are sick and tired of taxes. The voters probably will not approve any more open space funding. That's my prediction. There will be no funding, which means your job will be to complete the act of theft that this Highlands bill is really initiating. The laws will remain. There will be no funding. There will be no relief. And let me give you a few of my thoughts on your resolution concerning sustainable agriculture, because for many of us, that is the only thing we have left. You have taken our other options away. Therefore, when you develop a plan for sustainable agriculture, develop it with a business plan that we can take to the bank and borrow money on. If you can't develop a business plan that will persuade a lender to lend money, it's a farce. Another thing I would suggest is anybody in the preservation area shall be entitled to secure their niche market, because a niche market is only a niche market as long as it's a niche. If everybody gets into it, it's a market. Therefore, I would suggest that you establish a grow by permit system, the same as that has been done for tobacco and hops. As a matter of fact, the federal government, in recognition of the fact that the tobacco market is drying up, paid the tobacco farmers with these permits $10 billion to buy their permits back. You could do the same. You want to do sustainable agriculture? Here's a few clues. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and members of the Council. My name is Jason Stepinski. I'm an attorney with Stearns & Weinroth, a law firm located in Trenton, New Jersey. I represent OFP, a limited liability corporation, and an owner of property that was subjected to retroactive application of the Highlands Act. OFP owned a 26-lot subdivision in Washington Township in the preservation area. OFP had all local and DEP permits except one as of March 29, 2004, and obtained the final DEP permit in June of 2005 before enactment of the Act. OFP is currently in litigation with the state in the appellate division over the retroactive application to the Highlands Act of the Highlands Act to its property. OFP did attempt to apply for a Highlands waiver in October of 2004. DEP delayed and finally sent OFP a letter in October of 2005 denying OFP a Highlands Act exemption, which OFP was aware it didn't qualify for and required OFP to begin the waiver process all over again, contradicting prior representations made by the state that DEP was in fact considering a waiver application. Unfortunately, the Highlands Act interim rules do not permit the filing of a waiver application until OFP first files an application for a transfer of development rights, or TDR. The state argued to the trial court that the TDR standards would be available in June of 2006, and therefore OFP had an administrative remedy and its claim was not right. The trial court relied on that representation in finding that OFP did in fact have an administrative remedy. Now we hear that these standards for the TDRs will not be implemented until probably December 2006, possibly later. There is no administrative remedy that is currently available to OFP or to the other property owners who are in the same situation or similar situations. The state's inability to implement these remedies have resulted in a temporary taking or taking of property rights while the state determines how to deal with the ramifications of the act. We ask that the council remember that each day that these administrative remedies are not implemented is another day that property owners are deprived of the use of their land. And we ask that the council do its utmost to implement these remedies as soon as possible. Thank you.
In your first paragraph, you said
yes, Chairman.
The final approval you got was June 2005. Do you mean June 2004?
I'm sorry. Yes, I do, okay. Sir. Thank you.
And which Washington township is that?
Morris County.
Morris County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Someone left their glasses.
Other comments? Yes.
My name is Deborah Post. Six land use categories, two areas and four zones, are described on pages 11 and 12 of this council's scoping document, to wit, the preservation area, the planning area, the redevelopment zone, the conservation zone, the rural agricultural zone, the community zone, and the TDR receiving zone. These areas and zones are not clearly defined. I need some clarification, and today we'll just ask you a few questions. Are the zones subsets of the areas, or are the six described land use categories separate and distinct from each other? How many zones will be in the preservation area? Will there be just a redevelopment zone and a non-development zone in the preservation area? Will all lands in the preservation area that are not in the redevelopment zone receive TDRs in proportion to their pre-Highland development potential? Will there be conservation zones only in the planning area, as suggested by the map on page 11? Or will there also be conservation zones in the preservation area? By the way, what's the purpose of having a conservation zone in the planning area, which the legislature clearly intended as a place for people to live and shop? Or is the purpose to make the planning area also a preservation area, but call it a conservation zone instead? Isn't a conservation zone in the planning area a bit oxymoronic? If the planning area is full of conservation zones, where will the TDR receiving zones be? Will the community zone only be in the planning area? Is the redevelopment zone basically a community zone in the preservation area? Will the TDR receiving zone be a standalone zone or a subset of other zones? Will the TDR receiving zone be a null set? Is the rural agricultural zone in the planning area or in the preservation area or in both? Interestingly, the map on page 11 does not show any agricultural zones, suggesting that it will be in neither area. By decreeing low-impact development on agricultural lands, will the regional master plan de facto downzone the agricultural lands in the planning area as well, so that all Highland farmers are harmed equally? Will the rural agricultural zone with low-impact development, allowed, be given TDRs for the difference between the pre-Highland zoning and the low-impact zoning? Or will agricultural land be simply downzoned to almost, but not quite zero, and thus farmers denied their just compensation. Isn't the agricultural zone a clever way to ensure that the potentially huge takings cost of this act be reduced to a manageable level by not paying the farmer, an unorganized group that doesn't pay to play? This, is it not, the Highlands' evil endgame?
We will get your answers to the
question. We have a copy of that statement.
Yeah. Do you have a copy of that?
Sure.
Thank you. Other comments?
Again, David Pringle, campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation. The Federation has 70,000 individual members and an additional 100 member groups, the vast majority of which drink from, recreate in, and or live in the Highlands of New Jersey. I'm also a paid environmentalist. As was described earlier, I make a whopping $45,000 a year. I've been doing this work for 20 years. I get reimbursed 22.5 cents a mile. I believe the IRS reimbursement rate is about 36 cents these days. So, you know, I'm obviously not making a lot, and that's fine. I take great pride in my work and the reasons I do it. I had the honor of being featured in New Jersey Monthly a couple years ago, where they had about 100 folks in the public and private sectors and what their annual salary was. And I was proud, and it wasn't perverse pride, but it was outright pride that I had the lowest salary of those featured. So I just want to put that in perspective where folks are coming from. A couple comments from just hearing other people's comments, talking about map and science. As one of the lobbyists who helped get the Highlands Act passed, you know, we have laws in this. There's no way you can pass. As long as we're having elected officials make decisions, there's going to be political science. The fact is, the map was based on science, had to go through a political prism. That's life. Unless you're going to have, unless we're going to have a point, scientists magically make all decisions in the world. We live in a political world. Folks need to get used to it, and you just have to get a balancing act. Yes, this is the farmer's land. It is the landowner's land. Just because it's your land doesn't give you an unfettered right to do with it whatever you want. You don't have the right to pollute somebody else's drinking water. You don't have the right to flood somebody else's land. You don't have the right to destroy other people's quality of life. The trick is a balancing act between property rights and other rights. And it's the charge of this council, and I know this council understands that, to get it right, and we have every confidence you will, and I'm sure the farmers will watchdog you. We will watchdog you, and we'll get it done in the next several months. You also have to realize, people talk about takings. What about givings? How valuable would the farmer's land be if Route 80 and Route 78 and Route 287 were never built? How valuable would Long Beach Island be if the Garden State Parkway would never be built? Folks aren't giving money back to the government because government made decisions to make their land more valuable. So it has to be a balancing act, and that, again, is what you're charged with doing. And I'm very confident that as long as farmers want to farm crops and not farm houses, that they will be very well satisfied and have long, healthy careers, and the environmental community is dedicated to helping make that happen. To that end, we want to see, and we're glad you support the water tax.
Hey, it is not 3 minutes. It was 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Please be quiet. Be courteous.
We don't
vote on
lands.
Hey, quiet.
To that end, we are very pleased to council, and we very much support the water tax. We'd like to see even greater than it has currently existed. And if the council, pardon my ignorance, if the council hasn't already weighed in to make sure the vast majority of that water tax goes to open space preservation and not infrastructure, that is critical. And whatever does go to the infrastructure needs to be done with appropriate rules in place to make sure it doesn't fund sprawl, because I know one of the projects they're looking at is the Confluence Project, which would fund, without more rules in place in the planning area and elsewhere, will just exacerbate the problem in the long run in Hunterdon County.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You'll be seeing more of me, don't worry.
Thanks for the money. Hey. People here, there are people who come and speak at every one of these meetings. There are people who come and speak occasionally. I would like if people would listen quietly, whether or not you agree to the people, and not interrupt. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Scott Olson. I'm a resident of Byram Township, and despite what Mr. Fry might believe, I'm a landowner as well. Just to give you some quick facts on Byram Township, it's 14,400 acres, 23 square miles. The township has about 23% of its property owned by the state in Alamuchi State Park. The remaining 67% of the property is owned by nine people who own 47%, and the other 9,900 residents live on just 23% of that property. All of us drink our water from beneath the ground on which we live. All of us are trying to be responsible citizens, and while I appreciate the fact that, property owners have rights and landowners have rights, I think what you people need to consider is the greater good of all those residents of towns like Byram, where you've got a small community of people who are complaining about property rights and a very large community who are concerned about the property that they own and the value of their homes. My home is worth nothing if the water beneath it that I have to drink is polluted. And I think that's something that you people need to keep in consideration and keep a balance with as well. And I appreciate the efforts you're making. Thank you.
Meeting is scheduled for Thursday, May 4th at 10 a.m. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Vote.
Oh, he's got the